Brazil and other Latin American governments have followed Washington down the free market path, only to find that they are now losing control over their economies. As we saw earlier this year in neighboring Argentina, popular uprising throughout Latin America has rejected free market economics as pushed by the World Bank and International Monetary Fund, and defined in trade agreements like the FTAA. Brazil is approaching an important national election. Brazil, Latin America's largest country, has just engaged a $30 billion loan from the International Monetary Fund, one that imposes strict policies on the next government. We spoke with Pablo, an organizer from Sao Paulo, Brazil, active with Local Action for Global Justice, a grassroots organization part of the People's Global Action Network.
This loan is the largest loan the IMF has ever given to any country in the world. So it's a big loan. Brazil in the last couple of weeks was facing a very strong pressure from markets. Foreign investors was very unsure of what might happen to Brazil, and our currency is suddenly start being undervalued very fast, and government papers was falling, and near that upcoming crisis, the government managed to get a loan from the IMF so it can put things in order. So he got this very large amount of money to put things in order. The problem with the loan, though, is that attached to it, there's a series of recommendations that are enforced by the IMF and that extends to the new government. This year, Brazil has elections for president, and the first and the second candidates appearing in polls are both from opposition. And what this loan says is that Brazil is receiving that large amount of money as long as it keeps a kind of politics that are recommended by the IMF, and that extends to the new government. In order to receive that money to solve this urgent problem that was caused by the pressure of the market, not only the government now that exists right now, but the new government, so the candidates running for president had to say that they agree with the terms from this agreement with the IMF. So they had to say okay, and they have to say that in case they are elected, they have to follow the instructions given by the IMF, which means more neoliberalism, to keep going with privatization of whatever is left. That means to keep the economy open, less state intervention, less workers' rights. So that's a big problem. That's a big problem because it takes whatever capacity that the Brazilian people has to put pressure on the government to guarantee its rights. Even if a very popular candidate that compromised with popular struggles are elected, he can do very little because of the terms imposed by the agreement with the IMF.
How do you think that the United States and the IMF have caused instability by giving loans out and are causing general will cause instability in Brazil and have caused instability in other Latin American countries such as the neighboring Argentina?
Well, the IMF believes that the neoliberal model, that is open economy, less state intervention, less state-owned enterprises, and less worker rights, that this formula guarantees development, and the way by which the IMF imposes this to Latin America is attaching these demands to the loans. So anytime that you need to borrow money from the IMF, the country has to sign an agreement insane that it compromised to follow those rules. And every time the crisis gets worse and worse, and the evaluation from the IMF is that because it's not because we're going too neoliberal. The evaluation from the IMF is precisely the opposite, that we weren't doing it too good, so we have to go even further. And so the situation gets worse and worse, and probably the worst example or the best example of that policy in Latin America is the Argentina, who is in the middle of a very serious crisis. And I've been recently to Argentina, and there is a kind of consensus that there is no way out of the crisis. The currency, in a matter of, I don't know, maybe 10 days, was undervalued 3 times. So one day, one peso was equal to $1, one U.S. dollar. And in a matter of 10 days, one peso, $1 was equal to 3 pesos. And now it's almost 4 pesos. So suddenly, the money you had in your pocket from comparison to international goods undervalued, like, it instantly became like 30% of what it was 10 days ago. And this has a huge impact on the economy. It means lots and lots of unemployment. The prices of goods that have any imported that's not produced nationally, and that's a lot of things that are not produced nationally. Everything else suddenly costed like 3 times the original price. So it was a huge impact. There is a lot of poverty, misery, and hunger in Argentina right now, and even mainstream economists don't seem to find any short-term solution, even medium-term solution. They're involved in a very deep crisis, and right now Uruguay, which is a nearby country, it's in the middle of a very serious crisis, and Brazil is just waiting its turn because we're very afraid that we're the next in line.
How are people in Brazil reacting to the increasing poverty that they see in the countries around them, and perhaps in the future for Brazilians?
Well, situation in Brazil is not good. I mean, we are in a crisis. We are not only in that serious crisis as Argentina are, but we don't know how long that will last. Situation isn't good here. There's a lot of different movements and initiatives trying to resist those policies imposed by the IMF, but this is actually very hard. And there's a general feeling in the past, I don't know, 2 years, that any solution has to be not specifically to one specific movement or to one specific country. So we have to work together and find ways to solve our problems in a more international way. So at least from 2 years ago, there's been very different initiatives trying to coordinate in South America different movements so we can find ways of resisting collectively. And I think this is probably the key issue right now, because this is the way the global economy is affecting people, affecting the different people in different countries, can only be resisted if people organize themselves beyond their borders as well.
And that resistance has shown itself lately against the FTAA, the Free Trade Area of the Americas, the proposed agreement, which in reality really illustrates the same neoliberal policies which are sending Latin American economies down the toilet. So could you speak about the recent resistance which has been shown in Brazil, a 3,000-strong protest in northern Brazil against the FTAA and the continued resistance? So could you speak about those movements and specifically how they relate to the FTAA?
Sure. There's right now, at least in the past year, there's There are different movements and groups campaigning against the FTAA. It became like a big issue because people start realizing that the FTAA might have a huge impact on their lives, especially in terms of privatization of public services and guarantee of company rights over workers and health and environmental laws. So there are a lot of initiatives going on right now in Brazil and Latin America in general. This week, there were different campaigns in different cities in Brazil and protests in, I don't know, maybe 10 cities happening simultaneously protesting against the FTAA. But this is probably not the most important thing happening right now. The most important thing is the national referendum on the FTAA that is organized by social movements, the unions, left parties, and the Catholic Church. It's on the first week of September. It's expected that 10 million people will go to this referendum, which is unofficial. It's not organized by the government. It's organized by civil society. And this referendum to say if they want Brazil to go into the FTAA, and if this is one question. The second question is whether a Brazilian government should even continue negotiating the FTAA agreement. So it's expected that 10 million people will participate in this national referendum, which will mean, in case people massively vote against the FTAA, as it is expected, that could make a good could work as pressure to put in the new government that will be elected to tell them that 10 million of our people are saying that we shouldn't join the FTAA. So this will mean in the future a lot of pressure.
Could you speak about the upcoming elections? As you mentioned earlier, two of the major candidates are left of center, very strongly left of center. So could you speak about the elections and the kind of impacts that potential victories for leftist parties would have on Brazil's economy and people?
The situation right now is that there is a lot of pressure on those candidates, the two candidates that are most likely winning the elections are, as you said, center-left, and the other is probably more, will be considered more typically left candidate. But there is a lot of pressure from, especially from markets, there's a lot of pressure on them so they can make their discourse and their proposals less radical. So, for example, all this crisis that we had before the IMF loan, when stock exchange rates went down and our currency was very undervalued, all those pressure from the market were very, very focused on the main candidate, which is this left-wing candidate called Lula. And all this pressure is very focused on him because the market, that means the investors and the big companies, were afraid that this new government will bring policies that were not in their interest. So by means of those pressure, they are successfully forcing the candidate to make milder and milder declarations or milder and milder statements and to change its policies and to change its program so it gets less pressure. So one example, the Workers' Party, which is the party who's was most likely winning the election, were very active organizing a national referendum on the FTAA, and due to this pressure, the Workers' Party the day before yesterday just announced that it quit the campaign because it didn't want to have its name involved with the campaign against the FTAA and maybe suffer from the pressure from big companies and investors. So this pressure is actually working in making the discourse and the program and the agenda of the left parties milder and less aggressive from their point of view.
Could you speak about the grassroots organizing that's going on, the different movements of thousands of people that are still resisting the FTA, that are still organizing within communities from a strictly anti-FTA perspective?
Even though the Workers' Party has quit the campaign against the FTAA, there's a number of initiatives going on, and there's a lot of different social movements involved in the campaign. From, for example, one group that is very involved and is very important is the Landless Workers Movement. The Landless Workers Movement is a movement with, I don't know, maybe 2 million workers who fight for agrarian reform in Brazil. And they're very, very involved in the anti-FTAA campaign, not only organizing the national referendum on the FTAA, but also doing different kinds of actions to both as educational campaigns and things like going to different places and talking about the FTAA, but there are a lot of actions being expected in the week from in the first week of September, in the week of the national referendum, things like occupying public buildings and street demonstrations and all different kinds of protests to make it very public and very clearly to say it very loud to the public opinion that people of Brazil is not going to accept the FTAA. So besides the workers, the Landless Workers Movement, there are, all the unions are very involved in the campaign, students' movement, and the different groups that were generally known as, quote, the anti-globalization movement. So there are lots of protests being expected all over Brazil also, that street demonstrations and direct action taking place all over the country to protest the FTAA.
Could you speak about the importance of people here in the North, people in America, in Canada, in Europe, building resistance towards these neoliberal policies of the IMF and the World Bank? Also, I mean, specifically in North America against the FTA, we saw 60,000 people protest on the streets in Quebec City. And upcoming this fall in Washington, D.C., thousands of people will converge in the capital of America to protest the World Bank and IMF, the same institutions which have created a lot of this instability. So could you speak about the importance of people in the North in mobilizing in solidarity with people in Brazil and Argentina and the region?
Sure. It's very, very, very important. The mainstream discourse in mainstream media and mainstream press, the mainstream discourse says something like globalization is good for the South. They say that with globalization and neoliberalism, we'll have much more investments going to the South. And all this campaign against neoliberalism and globalization and economic globalization comes from people in the North, that they are losing their jobs because they're not competitive. So they're losing investment, and investments are migrating to the South. And for a long time, I would say from the early 90s to that was very strong in public opinion because of the pressure of mainstream press. However, what people start realizing was that the same way as there were pressures in the North from investments to go to the South, and they would say, well, we'll go to the South because your labor laws are too strict and you have too much social benefit, then that's very expensive. So we go to the south where labor is cheaper, and we're going to produce that. The same kind of blackmail that they did to workers in the north in order to come to the south, to come to Brazil, they would do to Brazil in order to go to a different southern country. So they would say, oh, okay, Brazil, labor in Brazil is too expensive, we have too much social benefits, too much labor protection laws. So if you'd not change this, labor here becomes very expensive. So we're going to move to a different country. Let's say we go to Argentina or we go to Taiwan or whatever. So people start realizing that that was a fake, that we're not competing with that globalization was not a competition from North and the South, that the most important opposition was that workers and environment and the interest of the population was the opposition between those interests and the interests of big corporations and investments and some of the governments allied with them. So people became very clear that the same process that workers and people in the North were facing, we're facing the same problem. And people are starting to understand and to realize that we have to face, we cannot solve that problem by ourselves. I mean, there's nothing that we can do here in Brazil to resist the FTAA or to resist IMF or to resist neoliberalism by ourselves. We have to do it coordinatedly with people all over the world. We have to do it somehow at the same time or somehow coordinatedly. So, because this is a global process. If you resist here, so capital will go somewhere else. But if we resist everywhere, where we can start to put back those policies of cutting social rights, of cutting environmental protection laws, and get back and get those rights and those laws protecting us again, and start getting our rights again, and even improving them in the future. So. Right now, it's becoming more and more, especially among unions who are very resistant to have a more internationalist approach to those subjects. It's becoming very clear that they need to coordinate internationally and that this is not a question of Brazil alone. It's a matter of us all, and not only us all in the South, but us all in the world, because the process that we're facing here, even though it's harder here because people are poorer, it's the same process that you people are passing in the North, in Canada, or the U.S., or Europe.
For more information, visit www.brazil.indymedia.org or visit the People's Global Action Network at www.agp.org.
Despertador automático.